Welcome back to another episode of Streetwise English. Today we have an interview with a returning guest, Matt Gibson, aka the Voice of God. He's going to tell a story that took place in 1969 in the Navy. If you've been following this podcast, you'll know that we also had a Navy fight interview with Dagwood Streets of the Electric Scooter podcast, in which he got into a knife fight. So if you enjoy this kind of story, be sure to check out that episode as well. This story that Matt was just foreshadowing, just telling us about a little bit, is a case of not getting along with his boss. And I know That's right. The listeners out there, everyone's had this situation where your boss disrespects you, treats you like dirt. And what are you going to do, though? Because that's your boss.
Well, when you're 19 years old in the Navy and you join the Navy to avoid being conscripted into Vietnam, and, you know, I had no anticipation of military service, but Vietnam occurred and they drafted everybody in my neighborhood, got drafted. I turned 18 in December, having graduated from high school at only 17, and went into the Navy because my entire community went to Vietnam except me. I joined the Navy to avoid it. It was either that or Canada or something like that, and I didn't want to do that. But anyway, I find myself in the Navy on the USS Stickle, the 888. And this is the late 60s. This is the civil rights era. And you can imagine it was not that pleasant a place in the Navy if you were a person of color. It's a fact. And they knew it. It was very hard to make rank or make rate when I was in there. Very difficult if you were a person of color. I tested in the top 3 percentile of the Navy and had never worked on any engines of any kind, but they made me a machinist mate, which they thought was, you know, prestigious for a black man to even be put in the engine room, which most black sailors were cooks, boiler tenders, and bosun's mates, the lowest things in the Navy. I was a machinist mate, which is called a snipe, which is the second lowest thing in the Navy. But anyway, I had a boss, and I could mention his name, and I can't believe he could still be alive, but his name was Loftus, Chief Loftus, L-O-F-T-U-S, I believe. And he hated my guts and made no bones about it. And he had seen to it that I had been prosecuted for some minor infractions. I'd gone to captain's mast, and at his he had written me up a couple of times. Anyway, I hated his guts, but he was a drunkard on top of everything. And every port we'd pull in the port, you'd see him and his other drinking buddies. They'd be coming back to the ship, drunk as skunks. We'd see this frequently. We happened to be in Key West one night, and they had port base facilities where you could go drink without leaving the base. And so I'm at the base facility, and I see him in the bar, and he's just drinking as usual and rolling his eyes at me every time I look at him. And so he, you know, and he's saying things, and I'm probably imagining what he might have been saying, but he was looking at me and talking to his buddies, and I hated his guts anyway. And I felt I had grievances with him because I'd done a lot of extra duty because of him. Because he was in charge of extra duty, he'd give me the nastiest, like scraping the bottoms of boilers down in the bilges of the ship, the worst duty you could possibly do for punishments. Anyway, right or wrong, I hated his guts, and he probably hated mine. One night in Key West, I see him walking back toward the ship down a long pathway from this base facility, and I was ahead of him, and I got on across the quarter deck and went. The crew slept aft, and the officers and chiefs slept in the front part of the ship below decks. So it's late; it's 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning, and a lot of sailors are coming back on board. The place is closing. Instead of going to the back of the ship and going down in my berthing compartment, I go down the main passageway and go and wait by the door that he has to come in to get down into the chief's quarters. And it's nighttime. Only those smoking lamps, those red smoking lamps are lit. They aren't even lit. The night lights are lit. The smoking lamp is not lit. Just some red night lights on the passageways are on, and I can see him, and I hear him coming. They're laughing. He's coming down the main deck toward the passageway, and he's by himself by the time he gets there. Some other lieutenants or something have gone into their staterooms, which are somewhere amidships. He's below decks forward. He comes in that passageway, and I hit him as good as I ever hit anybody in my whole life, probably better than I ever hit anybody in my whole life. I don't think I ever hit anybody like I hit Loftus, and I hit him squarely in that Loftus puss of his. And I understood at that moment, you know, the joy of just raw violence, and because I hated him, and I punched him, and I was so satisfied with it. It was a feeling I've never had before and haven't had since. But, you know, I still felt, you know, I was justified in punching Loftus. The next day they were trying to find out who had punched him. And he actually, I think, thought he fell. It took him a couple of days before they start seriously trying to find out if someone assaulted him, because he was such a drunk, they thought he might have, you know, just fell on his face somewhere and busted his face up. But I had hit him squarely in the nose. His lips, his mouth, his everything was swollen up. His eyes turned black. I saw him a couple of days later. Both his eyes were black and his lips were swollen up to twice normal size. And they knew I hated him above all the people on the crew, because he just hated my guts. I mean, he was openly hated me, or I felt he did. And but they, no one came to question me for several days. But about the third or fourth day, and this, my hand had been swelling, and I'd been icing it, trying to get it down, because I hit him good.
What happened to your hand?
My hand was, the morning I hit it, my hand was swollen up to twice normal size. I mean, if they would have came and looked at me that first day, they could have seen I probably did it. I even had a tooth cut on it. And, but nobody... Nobody said anything to me. And so a day went by and people were talking about, yeah, I heard the rumors that was going around. They think somebody assaulted Loftus. And I certainly didn't tell anybody. And every day I was going down, they had an ice machine on the mess decks, and I would go down and get a handful of that ice, and I'd just be sitting there with that ice and just praying that I knew they was going to come. I knew I'd go to Leavenworth for doing assaulting an officer, and I hope there's a statute of limitations on that, because I probably could go still to this day. But what I punched him, he probably was never right again. But I always thought that, in retrospect, that maybe, just maybe, it might have made him stop drinking. You know, he thought, the rumor was that he had fallen initially. But after a few days, his boss, who was really the head of my division, Loftus was a chief, the officer above him, came and called me up out of the engine room one day. And I don't know if you've ever been on a ship, but when you come out of the upper ladder out of the engine room, you come up out of a hole onto the main deck, and you have to put your hands on the upper rung. And he and Loftus were waiting for me up there, but they didn't say anything. But my hands by that day, the third or fourth day, the swelling had gone down. It was no sign of the, you know, that I had punched him in the mouth like that. And but it was very satisfying. I must admit it was very satisfying. I mean, I understand, you know, how some people could take revenge. I felt vengeful of him. He had caused me a lot of grief, you know, a lot of grief.
So you were even after that.
We were even after that. I would intimate to him that I'd look him right in the face, which I normally didn't do, and you know, and we walked past each other in the passageway, and I had a little lightness in my step, and I could look him in his face, and you know, I would salute him as a, you know, I was very smart. I gave him a very smart salute, and but they never got me for that one. They never got me. I never went to Leavenworth. And smaller ships don't have brigs anyway. There's no brigs on a destroyer. It's too small. So if you have an infraction, they just confine you to the ship or make you do extra duty, or try to make you do extra duty. The thing about the Navy will not grab you and force you to do anything. They can, if you're on a ship that has a brig, they can throw you in a brig. But some of the things I did while I was in the Navy, it sounds crazy, but in fact, on this cruise that I went, where we went to Saudi Arabia, where I jumped off and saved Stuart, they had 11 captain's masts and one summary court-martial, and I was at every one of those captain's masts, and the summary court-martial was for me, for UA. So this is, I had, when I got out of the Navy, Carl.
What's UA?
Unauthorized absentee. I've seen my ship deploy while in a front, while I was on land. I've seen it pull out while I was not there.
And missed the boat.
I missed the boat. And, you know, so, you know, I had a terrible time in the Navy. The Navy.
Did you ever get in trouble for having, did you grow your hair long?
Yeah. There was a picture of me and a friend of mine that made the cover of the Navy Times, and it shows me and him. As you can see, it's shot from a barracks, looking down on a street, walking by. They're above us on a hill. Someone took this picture, and it's me and another guy, and we had big afros, and I used to buy extra small white hats, and it would sit right. Right here. This is about it. And from the back, you couldn't even see the white hat. And it shows me and another guy who had done this. We just came back off a cruise. And me and this guy named Lacey are walking down. And the sun is coming in. You can see these long shadows behind us. And these big afros. And you can't see the white hat on my head from the back. And from the back, you can see it's me, though. It made the cover of the Navy Times, 1969.
Wow.
June or so of night. I probably can get it. It's probably available somewhere.
Yeah, in the archives somewhere.
Yeah, somewhere it's got to be. They don't throw those away. It had to be about June or July of 1969, because that's when we got back off that Red Sea cruise.
Yeah. And the Navy, I don't know if people don't all know, but they restrict like your facial hair. And then also, you know, the hair on your head, like they can't touch your ears, all this stuff. And I don't know about afros, what the rules were, but.
Well, when you go to sea, they normally let you grow beards. Okay. And afros, but listen, I had so much bad time with that after a few of these captains, I just did whatever the fuck I thought I wanted to. I was confined to the ship for probably half of that cruise. Although I had a tacit agreement with the Navy. If you caught me sneaking off the ship, they would add a couple of weeks extra duty, you know, fine me. I'd been fine. At one point, Carl, I was fined 50% of my pay twice. When I got out of the Navy, they owed me some amount of money, a couple thousand dollars, because for months they had fined me 50% of my pay twice, on 50% of my 50% they were fining me. And I had a small stipend going home, and with that small stipend going home, they owed me no money on payday. Without the photography, I would have had no money. They would give me what they called $10, what they called cigarette money, they would give me $10 every 2 weeks, cigarette money. And if I wasn't hustling them photographs, I would have had no money. And I did well with those photographs. Nobody else carried a camera on the ship. People had them, but they wasn't thinking about carrying them and loading them with film and having the film process.
Yeah, I remember you told me before you bought your car out of the Navy with all photography money.
Yeah, I did. When I got back, I'd saved enough money. I was making $30 or $40 a payday, you know, sometimes more than that, for, you know, guys sitting in houses of prostitution and bars with prostitutes. The guys would, you know, Matt, take my picture, Matt. And they knew that it would cost $5, charge $5. And I didn't have to pay for film or processing. A friend of mine I was in boot camp with, who was a successful photographer when he went in the service, became a photographer's mate and worked at the photo lab in Newport, Rhode Island. He would send me grosses of 400 ASA black and white film, a gross of it, you know, like a box of it, and I could send the exposed film and then Fleet Post Office back to Newport, Rhode Island from the Indian Ocean somewhere and get prints back within 10 days. It was amazing. The Fleet Post Office was better than the regular post office. And
so everybody on the crew knew you as the bad boy photographer.
They knew they but they knew if they didn't pay me one time, I'd never take another. I had guys I would not take a picture. They say, Matt, take my picture, Matt. They got some prostitutes sitting up there with them, and in Recife in Brazil, some damn where with four Brazilian prostitutes. And Matt, take my picture. And then payday comes and you don't pay me after I didn't had to film, processed the film, shipped it to Newport, got it back, and you're not going to pay me my lousy $5 for these pictures? Oh, I'd never take another picture of you. And they knew it too. And that was my hustle. They knew I had no money. I had gotten it. I've climbed off ships so many different ways. Carl, I have literally we've been on ships moored outboard of other ships. I have jumped from my ship to the next ship closer to the pier and gone off on their quarterdeck. I have literally, my move was to take my uniform off in a garbage barrel as though I was dumping garbage on the pier and go behind a dumpster and put get out of my dungarees and put my Liberty uniform on. Carl, I had a fake Liberty card and a fake ID. They confiscated my ID card and my Liberty card. There was a black, I forget what the rate was called. A lifer, black guy who worked in the offices and had access to the blank ID cards. They had confiscated my car. Here, listen to this story right quick, and I'll finish with this. A guy named Green, he was a lifer, a black lifer. He was, I forget what they called him, I can't think of the name of his rate, but he worked in the offices. He was a lifer, had been in the Navy 12, 15 years. They all knew I'd been restricted to the ship. They had confiscated my Liberty card and my ID card. Green gave me another ID card and another Liberty card because I was sneaking off. We were in foreign countries. You better have some kind of ID or something. He did this for me. On the back of a military ID card, it says, for falsification of this document, you can spend like life in the penitentiary. But he did that for me. One day, I'm getting ready to sneak off the ship. The same guy, the boss of Loftus, the man I punched, and he happened to come down in my berth compartment. I had my fake ID and Liberty card on my rack. And I'm preparing to leave the ship to go have Liberty. I didn't, all they're going to do is give me 2 more weeks extra duty. I already got months of extra duty and 2 more weeks of restricted to the ship. Well, he walked up on me in the corner by my rack and he saw the ID card. He was one of the people who had confiscated the original one. He had to approve the confiscation of my legal one. He sees this, he grabs it. Now, what this means is the end of Green, the man who gave me these cards, the end of his career. He could go to jail. There's only the number of the card was probably the next numbered card in their safe where they kept the blanks. That's where Green got it from. Well, Carl, Green, they wrote me up. They called me to the same guy who picked him up, the department head. They called me to a stateroom, and he wrote me up. They had my ass now. They were really been trying to get me all along. And I think the reason they were trying to get me, too, one other aside, is because I was shipping the Black Power books around the fleet. I had Soul on Ice, Eldridge Cleaver's book, France Fanon's Wretched of the Earth, and 4 or 5 H. Rapp Brown's Black Power, these kind of books. I had about 5 of them, and I'd ship them to anybody. You ship them back, with the fleet post office, you don't pay for. And they had found out about this. I got them back once, and the box had been all ripped open, and after that, my troubles start. But I go to this guy's stateroom. He's got the cards. He's written me up. I'm going to be court-martialed for this, and so is Green. The next morning, I go and get. They have a muster on the quarterdeck every morning where they make sure everybody's still there. Now I got all this extra duty. I don't give a shit about going. I don't participate in some of this type of stuff anyway. They know it. They know I'm like a fuck up of some kind, and I'm not cooperating. So I don't normally go to this muster anyway on the flight deck. Well, while everybody's on the flight deck, I take a screwdriver and jimmy the stateroom door of the officer who had written me up. And on his desk are my write-up papers with the ID card and the Liberty card attached to the document still sitting on his little desk in his little stateroom. I snatch the ID card and go to the side of the ship we were underway and throw it in the ocean, and they were forced to drop it.
So you saved Green. Huh? You saved Green, too.
I saved Green, a lifer. He had 10 or 12. He was a second-class petty officer, and I think they call him pursers or... What do they call them guys that work in the offices? He was like a
yeoman.
Yeoman. Yeah, he was like a yeoman, a second class yeoman, and lifer type, total life, nice guy. He was trying to help me, you know, and they liked taking me with them because I didn't drink, and all these drunk, all them guys would drink, and I'd see to them. You know, wrestle with them and drag them back to the ship and make sure they didn't get in no more trouble than they would. And I mean, I helped a lot of guys over a long period of time. I didn't drink. So I was the only one that didn't drink. All the rest, everybody else drank. And I mean, they drank. They've been, you know, been on the ship a couple, 3 weeks, and then you pull in a port and they got two or three couple of paydays, got money in their pocket, and they go right to the bar and drink and then come back and sleep it off and get up and go to work the next day.
Well, sounds like you had your fair share of trouble, but some you survived it, and you didn't you didn't die in Vietnam.
I didn't. I sure didn't. I have an honorable discharge too, so I have all my benefits and all of that. So that's good, and I survived it, and I got a chance to spend 13 months in Africa. I've been to most of the major ports in Africa. I've seen more of Africa than most Africans would ever think of seeing. I sailed around Africa within sight of land virtually the entire trip, and it was the most incredible experience of my life. We had also on that ship a black signalman. And the signal bridge is the highest bridge on the ship. It's where they flash the lights and run flags up and communicate with other ships from. On that bridge deck is a set of high-powered binoculars. They call them the big eyes. And because the guy who ran the signal bridge was black, the black sailors would go up there and hang out, smoke cigarettes and talk shit and drink and do all kinds of wild shit up there. But from that ship, 10 or 12, 15 miles out to sea, with those binoculars, you could see into someone's house. You could see the clock on a wall in somebody's house and tell the time 15 miles out to sea with these binoculars. They were state-of-the-art Navy on a capstan. And that's what I would do, is just watch the continent go by. I'd go up there and look through those glasses. It was like, man, it was unbelievable. Endless stretches of white, sandy beaches, palm trees, jungle, mountains, waterfalls, people of the walk of, say, you know, ships and, you know, moving through the shipping lanes and the things I saw. And then going around the Cape, oh my God, the seas that down around the Cape, most roughest seas, some of the roughest seas in the world, but it's so jagged and beautiful down there. It's unbelievable, the topography, the mountains, the islands, and the seas are so lively. Two oceans meet at the horn of, around the Cape of Africa. So coming down out of the Atlantic and then the Indian Ocean, they both converge down there, and it's just incredible. The seas, you know, you're taking like some Moby Dick and the fucking white whale type of high seas type of shit, and a real nautical type of stuff. But to have had that experience, I really value it so much, you know. I got a chance to see Africa. I've never been anywhere I haven't traveled extensively overseas at all, since, other than the Navy.
That's Cape Town, South Africa.
Yeah, Cape Town, right. South. Yeah. Okay. We couldn't take Liberty there because at the time they didn't let the black sailors go into Cape Town. You couldn't. So they didn't let the white sailors have Liberty there either. There was a little base facility there. They let some of them go in there. I didn't even go over in Cape Town.
All right, Matt, I'm going to let you take a break and get some water.
All right, thanks, Carl.
thank you guys for tuning in. And Matt's got endless stories.
Endless stories, endless stories.
Thank you for sharing that, Matt.
My pleasure, Carl.
Okay, see you next time. Thank you for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed that. And remember that you can find the written transcripts on our website, streetwiseenglish.com. You can find the written transcripts. You can find images of our guest speakers. And you can also find information on how to email us or book an English lesson on the website, streetwiseenglish.com. Thanks again, and we will see you next time.